people are desperate. They're starving and desperate, and they don't make an easy decision to just leave the country.
It's clear from reactions to COP28 that although some progress was made in the form of pledges and other agreements by states and corporations, for many, the pace of change is too slow and action does not go far enough. Recognising the effect that the climate crisis is having and will continue to have on human rights, particularly in the world's poorest countries, the UN appointed a special rapporteur in this area in 2022. In this Global Insight podcast, IBA multimedia journalist Jola Verbruggen talks to Ian Fry, special rapporteur on climate change and human rights, about his mandate, the challenge of getting countries on board, climate refugees, and potential legal routes to justice, such as climate litigation.
After many years as climate advocate for the Pacific Island states and the LDCs, you became the UN's first special rapporteur on climate change in May 2022. Just going back a bit, I guess, is what do you hope to achieve in this role and how is that going so far?
Well, I'm hoping to make the links between human rights and climate change. We know people are suffering the impacts of climate change, their basic rights to food, water, shelter, and for some, their right to life is being affected by climate change. And so I'm hoping to make those links in those issues and to explore areas outside the climate change convention, I guess. In the 3 years that I've got this mandate for, I've sort of selected sort of six thematic areas, and I'm trying to sort of work through those. So my last report was on climate change displacement and trying to look at, you know, legal protection for people displaced by climate change. That's a very sensitive issue, and I'm only making very slow progress on that issue. And all these issues, there are a lot of challenges to, you know, to get countries on board to some of these issues and connect with human rights.
So creating political will is sort of a an issue on all fronts, it sounds like.
Yeah, it is a challenge. You know, depending on the issue, it's a challenge. You know, as I was saying, the migration issue is a very sensitive issue in Europe, for example, and of course the United States with a large migration of people moving towards the United States. So that's, you know, a challenge. But African states are quite interested in having this discussion. The interesting thing is it's developing countries who are the ones who are having to bear the burden of displaced populations. You know, if you think about Kenya, there's a large population of Somalians there who've moved across the border because of a long drought. And the same, there are Bangladeshis who have moved across into India, so it's India is bearing that burden. And so forth.
Absolutely. And that leads neatly into my next question, because you have said before that the lack of a legal definition for people fleeing the effects of climate change across international borders might result in people falling through the cracks when it comes to protection. And you have actually advocated for an optional protocol to the Refugee Convention to protect their rights and for states to provide humanitarian visas in the interim. How likely do you think it is that such a protocol would be developed, considering the power and also the lack of political will, as we said, to recognize climate refugees of the major polluting nations?
Yeah, well, of course, this is a big challenge. And of course, at the moment, as we're seeing in many countries, migration issues is a very sensitive issue. I don't have any illusions that this is going to happen quickly, but we have to have that discussion because these people are not going to go away. As climate change gets worse, we're going to see more and more people displaced across international borders as a consequence of climate change. And their rights need to be protected and ensured that they have a living outside their country. And my visit to Honduras just showed me that. You know, I went to some remote rural communities and I met those people, and all of the communities I visited, they had family members who had left the country completely because of either drought or a flood or sea level rise. And so people are desperate. They're starving and desperate, and they don't make an easy decision to just leave the country. But the problem is I also met people being sent back by the United States and, you know, interviewed some of those people. Some of them had left because of fear of being recruited by gangs, but others had left because of climate change, because of drought. And so they're just being returned to the same condition. And, you know, that sort of goes against the principle of non-refoulement, you know, as a basic principle of international law, that people should not be sent back to conditions that are undesirable.
And to move on to a fairly current case that is going on at the European Court of Human Rights, where six young people have brought a suit against over 30 countries for failing to do enough to reduce their emissions. And you have actually said part of the plans for your mandate were to enhance, to support climate change litigation. So it'd be great to hear what you think about this case being brought.
Well, these are critically important cases that really test the fact that young people's human rights are being affected, you know, as a consequence of a lack of action on climate change. We're also seeing senior women from Switzerland taking a similar case. So they're saying their future, they have an uncertain future themselves, and they're particularly being affected by climate change. So we're getting young people and senior women also bringing cases in the European Court of Human Rights. So these are quite critical cases. We're also seeing a number of cases, you know, advisory opinions being sought through international courts. So there's currently the International Tribunal on the Law of the Sea is reviewing, an advisory opinion brought by some small island states about the impacts on the sea by climate change. The Inter-American Court of Human Rights is asked for an advisory opinion by Chile and Colombia around the impacts of climate change on the human rights of people within that region. And of course, Vanuatu has brought a case through to the International Court of Justice seeking an advisory opinion on the obligations of states to protect future generations. So these are all critical cases, I think, that need to be heard to sort of drive the agenda. We're not going to get countries sort of voluntarily doing things unless they're pressured to do so. So these sorts of cases are critical. And the other cases are important to bring to not just against countries, but corporations. And I think this is where litigation is likely to move beyond just, you know, suing countries, but taking out litigation against companies and in particular board members. I think that's where the real leverage point will come.
Since we're talking about businesses, in one of your report, you recommend the establishment of an international human rights tribunal, actually, to hold governments, businesses and financial institutions accountable for climate change related human rights violations. What in your opinion are the duties and responsibilities of states and corporations?
The governments individually don't seem capable of dealing with these issues. So that's why I'm suggesting we need an international tribunal to deal with these. And part of the issue is that corporations are causing these human rights abuses and having a free hand to do so. We're seeing trafficking of humans, of people who are being displaced by climate change. So it just seems that some of these countries just don't have the authority or ability to deal with it.
Another tribunal, the International Criminal Court, you have advocated for them to take up the crime of ecocide, right? What are the grounds for this? And do you think there is the political will to actually make this possible?
Well, there is quite a campaign around this. This is not my idea. And I just picked up on quite some eminent people around the world, jurists, etc., who believe that this should be done. We are affecting the rights of people to right to life because of environmental harm. Then these are international criminal cases that should be brought before the ICC. And, you know, lives are being lost as a consequence of environmental harm, either through climate change or other effects, pollution, chemical pollution, those sorts of things. So there needs to be some sort of international tribunal to deal with this international harm that's causing. So I think it's an important step as well. There have been criticisms leveled at the ICC that it's mainly focused on developing countries. And of course, there are certain countries who don't recognize the jurisdiction of the ICC. And that's a problem in itself. But nevertheless, you know, I think we have to look at these sort of bigger picture issues and the environmental harm and legacy we're leaving to future generations. And we need to do something about that.
I just wanted to give you the opportunity, if there was something that I hadn't asked you about regarding your mandate, perhaps, that you think is important to discuss. And I just wanted to give you that opportunity as well.
One of the things I'm looking at for my next report to the Human Rights Council is corporate accountability. And this is a critical area that I'm looking at. So there's work going ahead on economic and social governance provisions. And, you know, the Biden administration is working on some of that. European Union are working on that. And, you know, some countries are sort of working on these provisions. So it's looking at across the sort of whole value chain of products to make sure that human rights and climate change are considered and reported on by corporations around their actions. And this is particularly critical for asset managers, for, you know, pension fund owners, that they reveal where they're investing their money. And it's important that we know if they're investing in fossil fuels, for instance. This is a critical part of the picture that we need to know. And I think there's a lot of leverage could be gained from getting this sort of information out into the public and using shareholders' rights to you know, hold companies accountable for their investments.